This is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this show on Free Speech TV nationwide and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates. Senator Bernie Sanders on Wednesday formally introduced a bill to transition the U.S. to a single-payer healthcare system, with a number of prominent senators joining him as co-sponsors, including Elizabeth Warren, Kamala Harris, Cory Booker, and Al Franken. Sanders challenged Washington's political establishment, saying, quote, "The American people are catching on to where the Republicans are coming from, and they see the limitations of the Affordable Care Act, and they are looking at the alternatives, and this is a rational alternative." In an accompanying op-ed in the New York Times on Wednesday, the independent senator and former Democratic presidential candidate blasted the status quo, writing, "We remain the only major country on earth that allows chief executives and stockholders in the healthcare industry to get incredibly rich, while tens of millions of people suffer because they can't get the healthcare they need." The GOP and President Donald Trump spent much of this year trying and failing to overturn Obama's signature Affordable Care Act, claiming that they could replace it with something better. But White House Press Secretary this week, Sarah Huckabee Sanders, declared that the president thought Sanders' Medicare for All bill was a, quote, horrible idea. My guest is Dr. Margaret Flowers. She's a pediatrician, National Board Advisor for Physicians for a National Health Program. She's on the board of Healthcare Now and on the steering committee of the Leadership Conference for Guaranteed Healthcare. Welcome to the program, Dr. Flowers.
Thank you so much for having me.
So Sanders has introduced such a bill in the past. This time, what seems to be different is that the mandate that he carries from all of the popularity for his primary candidacy has garnered him a lot more support in the Senate than before. Would you say that that's the main difference?
Well, I would say that this really reflects the energy that exists in the grassroots movement, that there's been a strong groundswell for National Improved Medicare for All, and that it's actually moved Senator Sanders. His bills in the past were not a national Medicare for All type of system. They were more of a state-based approach. And through the presidency, through that presidential campaign, and then even this year, he's been pushed by the grassroots. And we're very excited to see that he's introduced this legislation.
So this bill is different from the ones he's introduced in the past, and he lays out a little bit of what it is. How would you describe this particular bill? Because when we say single payer or Medicare for All, that's sort of a vague term. What that actually means might be slightly different depending on who you talk to.
Right. So we've had legislation in the House for the past 14 years called H.R. 676, the Expanded and Improved Medicare for All Act. And Senator Sanders' Medicare for All Act is similar to H.R. 676. We're still working through. It's a 96-page bill to really, you know, explain those similarities and differences for people, and we'll have that out. But overall, what it means is that when it's ultimately enacted, if all goes well, every single person in the United States will have a Medicare card. They'll have access to comprehensive coverage, much more than what currently is covered by Medicare. They can go wherever they want to go for care. They'll be covered from the time they're born until they die, no matter where they go in the country or if they're working or not working. And it will be paid for up front through our taxes so that no person has to make a financial decision when they need care about whether they have the money to get that care.
And of course, nobody would need to pay premiums into a health insurance system. So if they were already paying premiums, they would instead be paying something through taxes instead of premiums.
Yeah, you'll be paying less and getting more, if you can believe it. I think people are skeptical, but basically when we all pay into a single payer system, it's very much simpler administratively. It gives us the ability to negotiate prices. And so, you know, we're all sharing that risk, so we could pay less going in, and we have, you know, really health security knowing that we don't have to pay based on what our illness is, that if we have a serious illness, we can get the care for that.
And we don't have to pay for the profits of the health insurance companies and the large salaries of CEOs and pharmaceutical companies. Let's actually play an excerpt of the press conference that Senator Sanders introduced publicly, the bill, his Senate version of the Medicare for All bill. We'll watch Sanders, followed by Senator Elizabeth Warren.
All of us stand before you and proudly proclaim our belief that healthcare in America must be a right, not a privilege. Today, we begin the debate vital to the future of our economy as to why it is that in the United States, we spend almost twice as much per capita on health care as any other nation on earth, and yet we have 28 million people without any health insurance, and even more who are underinsured with high deductibles and copayments.
We are here today to take another step. We will not back down in our protection of the Affordable Care Act. We will defend it at every turn, but we will go further. We will go further, and we will say that in this country, everyone gets a right to basic health care. That's what Medicare for All is all about, and that's why we're here.
And that is Senator Elizabeth Warren. Before that, Senator Bernie Sanders. Warren and a number of other prominent senators joined Bernie Sanders in co-sponsoring his version of the Medicare for All bill. Now, one of the things that Warren said, which is slightly different from what Sanders says, is how Democrats treat the Affordable Care Act, right? Democrats are very careful to make sure they don't trash that law because it's constantly under attack by Republicans. But what that's done is they end up defending a law that certainly doesn't work well enough for enough Americans. Has that been a bit of a weakness of the Democrats and their position on healthcare?
It has been, and it's also a problem with having healthcare tied to partisanship. And so actually, we hope to achieve bipartisan support for a national improved Medicare for All system because that will make it the strongest. But really, the dilemma that we have faced in the United States for the past 100 years is whether we treat healthcare as a public good or human right, or whether we treat it as a commodity for profit. And so the Affordable Care Act treats it as a commodity using the private health insurance system. And so I think that hopefully Democrats will be able to make that distinction and understand that while they did the best they could, I think, to try to tinker with the current system and make it function better, you just can't do it when the premise is profit and not health.
Now, Paul Waldman, writing the Washington Post, put out a piece on the 13th saying, Bernie Sanders, a single-payer plan is here. Think of it as an opening bid. And he says, well, we have to understand this plan for what it really is, an opening bid. While he won't say so himself, I doubt even Sanders believes that something in this form could pass through Congress. Even so, it represents an important strategic shift for the Democratic Party. Does that disappoint you to see the media already saying, well, this is pie in the sky, we'll just sort of hold it up as an ideal against which we can measure something more realistic we might get?
You know, it doesn't surprise us at all. And we shouldn't be surprised if we look at the history of social transformation and how social movements have always been told that they were asking for too much. And we win when we make what seems impossible become inevitable. And already we've seen a huge change. You know, if you look back in 2009, 2010, when they were putting the Affordable Care Act together, single payer was off the table. We were excluded. We could barely get mentioned, you know, in the media. That has really shifted because there's a groundswell, a grassroots movement that's pressuring for this. And so it's our job as a social movement to make sure that we, you know, continue to press on members of Congress and make this the only politically feasible solution. They may use this as a bargaining chip to get something lesser, but we know that 100 years of what are we call more palatable approaches have all failed, and we just want what every other industrialized nation has and what we're already paying for.
In his New York Times op-ed, Sanders cited the growing support for single payer among Americans. And indeed, the idea of a single payer healthcare system has been quite popular for a long time, especially among those people who identify as liberals and Democrats. And so you would imagine that the Democratic Party would naturally sort of follow what their base wants. But even among Republicans and conservatives, there is a surprising level of support. Nearly half of Republicans show this. In the Pew Research polls came out recently, YouGov.com's research, which Sanders cited, all of these polls seem to show that there's strong support among the public for single-payer healthcare. And of course, why wouldn't there be, given that the public is the one that benefits most?
Right. I mean, you can think of this as a fiscally conservative approach, but liberal coverage. And especially if you look at Republican voters who are of lower income, who understand the cruelty of our current healthcare system, there's broad support for it there. If you look at our Medicare system, traditional Medicare is a single-payer system, or look at our VA, there's strong conservative support for those. So, and we're seeing support, you know, from Charlie Munger and Warren Buffett and Christopher Ruddy of Newsmax. These, you know, people that we wouldn't consider to be real liberals are coming out and saying, no, even the most capitalist countries in the world understand that healthcare does not belong in a marketplace, and that they do better when they have a universal, you know, some form of social insurance. Hmm.
Conservatives seem to want to denounce any sort of social safety net program until they have it, and then they defend it. But
exactly.
They seem to stand in the way of getting it. So despite this incredible popular support among the public, White House Press Secretary Sarah Huckabee Sanders said, I think that the president, as well as the majority of the country, knows that the single-payer system that the Democrats are proposing is a horrible idea. She said, I can't think of anything worse than having the government be more involved in your healthcare instead of less involved. She simply can't think of anything worse than that. Dr. Margaret Flowers, you're a doctor. I'm sure you've seen so much worse in the current system that we have today.
That's right. And I think that she's not listening to her own boss, because back when he wrote his book in the early 2000s, he praised the Canadian healthcare system as being a really great idea. When he was speaking to the president of Australia, he said, wow, you have a really fantastic healthcare system. So he knows that these systems work. And, you know, Donald Trump is kind of an open book. You know, he's for it, he's against it, he's for it. As the public opinion, you know, and culture shifts for this, we know that when the people lead, the leaders will follow. And so that's our job, not only to build this movement and pressure for this type of system, but we also need to make sure that everything is in the system that we want it to have. Sanders' bill is a very good bill in many ways, but it also has some areas that we think will need to be improved. And so as the public, we need to continue to press on our members of Congress to give us the strongest legislation.
Where do you think Sanders' bill could be improved?
Well, I think one thing is that they left out long-term care. They're keeping that in the current Medicaid system. And that's something that just really forces families to live in poverty. And that's not right in a country that's one of the wealthiest countries in the world and is spending so much already. Another area that we have concern about is allowing investor-owned health facilities to continue operating in it. We don't think that, you know, this profit motive belongs in our healthcare system. We know it undermines the quality of care that is delivered. It has the wrong incentives. And then another big one would be the transition phase. We believe that we should rapidly change to everyone being in the system. That's the best way that we get cost controls and don't have any cracks for people to fall through. Senator Sanders is talking about a 4-year transition period, and we have concerns that that will open the system up for problems and criticisms, because it'll be a very complex transition, and that could undermine its ultimate success.
Let's actually go through that transition. He lays it out in some detail in his New York Times op-ed. He first says the transition to the Medicare for All program would take place over 4 years. In the first year, benefits to older people would be expanded to include dental care, vision coverage, and hearing aids. That sounds pretty good. And the eligibility age for Medicare would be lowered to 55. All children under the age of 18 would also be covered. In the second year, the eligibility age would be lowered to 45, and in the third year to 35. By the fourth year, every man, woman, and child in the country would be covered by Medicare for All. Well, if it were to go in this way and be fairly smooth, certainly it would be better than what we have right now. But I think what you're saying is even better to just do it all at once.
We're already paying for it, and we won't get the savings until we have everybody into the system. We already have a national infrastructure through Medicare. Every health practitioner in the United States has a Medicare number. It's the way that we did Medicare in 1965. It's the way other countries have done their systems. We just think that it's better to say, okay, on this date, everybody's in the system, and then let's go. Are we really expecting private insurance companies to cover people between 18 and 45 or between 18 and 35? I think we're going to see some real problems there. Hmm.
What about the timing of the introduction of this bill? Basically, the GOP, I think, and Trump would like the whole national conversation on healthcare to disappear, to be swept under the rug. They don't want us to realize or remember that they failed in their many years-long efforts to destroy Obamacare and to repeal and replace it. And in fact, when the move to repeal it was afoot in Congress, Trump tweeted numerous times about how we're going to get something so much better. Don't worry, you know, Obamacare will explode. We will all get together and piece together a great healthcare plan for the people. This was exactly the opening for Democrats to come through with a good alternative plan that the Republicans were claiming they wanted. And it seems as though it was up to the independent senator from Vermont to push Democrats into actually doing this. The timing really is as good a time as any right now to push for this, right?
Right. You know, it was interesting because throughout the whole process of the repeal and replace, the Democrats were trying to message to their base, like, let's not repeal and replace. Let's fix the Affordable Care Act. Yeah. And the base was saying, we want to go beyond that. We need a national improved Medicare for all. It's time for that. And so there's a lot of energy. We saw tremendous energy in Congress, empowerment to the grassroots movement for being able to defeat those efforts to repeal and replace. And now people are taking that same energy and pushing forward for national improved Medicare for all. So this is absolutely the time. We know that it's a lot of work ahead, and people are ready to do that. They're excited.
Now, another sort of unsung hero in the single-payer fight is Representative John Conyers. And you mentioned H.R. 676. John Conyers introduced his latest H.R. 676 single-payer House version of the bill this January. He has said he's going to, and he's introduced it a number of times in the past. He said for as long as he remains a representative, he will keep introducing it. Could these two bills basically be the companion bills to one another on single payer, where we might see votes within the next year on in both the Senate and the House on single payer?
Wow, that would be really fantastic if that happened, and I wouldn't be upset about that at all. I think, you know, we owe a lot to Congressman John Conyers. He has introduced H.R. 676 every session since 2003. It's legislation that really came out of the single payer movement. It's what we consider to be our gold standard and have used it to educate and organize around. I think these bills are close enough. Again, I'm still analyzing Senator Sanders' bill, but I think they're close enough. And I think that, and Senator Sanders, to his credit, said this yesterday at the press conference. He wants us to let him know how he can improve the bill. So it's up to us as a movement to push him even farther to make sure that we get everything in there that we need and that we have, you know, the best legislation that we can get. But yes, this is the first time that I feel like we've got bills that can be considered companion bills in the House and the Senate. That puts us in a very strong position.
Let's talk about, finally, activism and grassroots support for these bills, because that's what it's, of course, going to take to push Congress in the right direction. Many establishment Democrats are still resisting backing the single-payer idea. Although Sanders has a number of prominent Democrats backing it, people who are seen as contenders for the next presidential election, which is a really powerful thing, there are still plenty of establishment Democrats who simply aren't committing to this. And so, of course, it's going to take that grassroots pressure. We saw a lot of defensive action around the Affordable Care Act when the Republicans were threatening to repeal it, you know, people doing sit-ins, et cetera. What sort of offensive actions do you hope will come about in the next few months to push these bills and say, we don't just want to hold the line on Obamacare, we want something better?
Right. And those offensive actions have already been going on this year. It's why we have a record number of co-sponsors for John Conyers legislation in the House. 117 Democrats have signed on. We're continuing to push on our, you know, Republican colleagues as well. We've gotten, you know, conservative Democrats who have signed on to this because they recognize that, you know, the private insurance companies don't have our interests in mind. They actually undermine our system. And so people are going to continue going to public events where their legislators are, meeting with their legislators, contacting them regularly, pressuring them. We have a campaign called Health Over Profit for Everyone You can visit it at healthoverprofit.org, and we have tools and information there to help people pressure their members of Congress. I expect that it will come down. You know, it's going to be a fight. We are up against very strong, wealthy interests in pushing for this system, but this is what the public wants and needs. So I believe that we're in a position to win, but it will take pressuring and taking our members of Congress who have signed on the legislation and saying, that's great that you put your name on it, but now you also have to walk the walk and get out there and hold events around it, educate, write op-eds, speak in the media. We're going to have to push them to actually live what it is that they say they support.
Right. It's not just enough to sign on to it. You need them to campaign around it. I mean,
right.
During the next several recesses, they could certainly hold town hall meetings, enabling people, an opportunity to come out and show how much they support and build that public support. Well, we'll see how it all works out. Healthoverprofits.org is that website, and we will post a link to it. Margaret Flowers, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you very much.
My guest has been Dr. Margaret Flowers. She's a pediatrician and the National Board Advisor for Physicians for a National Health Program. She's on the Board of Healthcare Now and on the Steering Committee of the Leadership Conference for Guaranteed Healthcare. We've been discussing the new push for a single-payer healthcare system. I'm Sonali Kohatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. Also, find us on Facebook, Twitter, iTunes, and Vimeo.